What is up, everybody? Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Anti-Gravity Group podcast. My name is Braden Carlson.
I'm Taylor Jesse.
And my name is Shane, or as you might know me, Postart.
And today we are talking about Rocketry Rule of Thumbs, or I guess Rules of Thumb is probably technically the grammatically correct way to say that. But first, I have an exciting announcement that I wanted to front load. We got our first email. So I wanted to put it up front so that people could reach out to ask us questions. The email address is contact@aggpodcast.com. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you're curious about how to find it on other platforms, you can also go to aggpodcast.com and see where it's listed. But Ed writes and asks, why don't you talk about Aerotech single-use DMS motors? I've used them for my level 1, level 2, and will use one for my level 3 attempt. Reasons include the lack of expensive casing and ease of use, especially for relatively new flyers. Thanks. I like DMS motors for certain cases, but the big barrier is the cost, especially recently. Those composite cases got real expensive real fast. So in the world of reloads, you can get a 75 millimeter M motor for the cost of an L1000 at this point.
And I forget that a lot of the smaller ones exist, because I grew up in when DMS wasn't really a thing. So there was the, back in the 90s, high power single use was plentiful. Then that kind of evaporated because cost got too high. And then in the 2010s, Aerotech came out with the DMS motors, and we have high power single use again. And they're quite popular, but we have a bunch of reload cases, so we probably should try to remember to cover, because a lot of the DMS stuff is like the single use equivalent of reloads that exist. Not all of them, but a lot of them. So we probably should try to remember, or try to throw in the DMS equivalents in our discussions when we can.
It's funny too, because like I really, when I was young, I was super fascinated with the I-65 and just like the concept of huge single use motors.
Yeah, me too. I remember me and my dad were like, a K-1050? Oh my gosh. Like, how do we get one of those?
And it's funny, actually, like when I first met Taylor, I didn't have a lot of hardware. So I was kind of like leaning into the DMS thing. And now look at me. It's gotten out of control so fast. Yeah, these past
you went
few
from
years.
No hardware to oops, I have three of everything.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, when I met Braden, he was just like, yeah, I'm just gonna fly DMS motors. I don't need the reload cases.
Well, at the time they were like not that much more expensive. Yeah. Now though, it's prohibitive, especially if you have the hardware.
Yeah, we're kind of the DMS stuff is kind of went back to how it was in olden times.
Where it is worth noting too that like in the level 1 and level 2 realms, hardware isn't as expensive as people might think. Like you can get that whole 54 starter set with the 2800, and I think it comes with a 1280, and then the full RAS setup for like $400 if you have a Wildman membership, or like under 200 for a 54 1706, which we covered last week, is basically the best motor case you can have. But yeah,
in the age of spacers, I mean, it really simplifies the whole game quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, I always advise to people that if they're going to be flying with any form of regularity, that they should just take the plunge on the hardware. But I do understand the enhanced risk factor and unwillingness to lose said hardware.
Also, like, if in the perspective of I'm just getting my level 1 and I've had just discovered high power, even that single like 29-180 or whatever is kind of a scary cost when you're not used to that sort of thing, even though in the realm of things it's not that expensive.
Right.
You haven't really scaled to the high power cost of things.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely understand the hesitation with 75 millimeter hardware and up, because that's where like the break in price is pretty substantial. Like I'm doing my minimum diameter 75 right now, and I went from a single use 54 millimeter motor that was like inconsequential lose to a 500 something dollar motor case. So we're taking extra precautions here to make sure this thing survives.
Yeah, not those cases aren't fun to lose.
Pasta's the only one of the anti-gravity. Yeah. Yeah, I haven't done that. Have you, Postart?
I haven't, no.
What about you, Taylor?
Oh, you know. It's one of my pastimes.
They're so fun to just throw, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to try to lose another one this year, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, another blue one. He's been talking about
yeah,
how he wants another blue one since I met him. And now he's got one, so hopefully we can get that thing lost real quick out of Alamosa, huh?
Yeah, let's get that out of your hands and right down in the dirt.
Yeah, back to Mother Nature. Dude, where it belongs.
I'm going to be so mad if I lose it first go around. Although I'm looking at my 3-inch electronics bay over here, and it's making me nervous.
That's the thing that's crazy to me. I was like, you went all the way. Like, you went so hard. You should do a video on that rocket, because...
Yeah.
Have you been... Oh, I guess you haven't really done much, huh?
No, I've been working on my house, but last night I was trying to, like, figure out what I need to do it, and if it'll even work, and now I'm like, oh my god, what have I done? But I'm just so illiterate in lipos that I don't know what I need.
I'll send you the ones that I just ordered for the Stratologgers. They're tiny, but they're 2S, so they're within the voltage recommendations. They're from a company called Palm Beach Bots. But yeah, I have so much room in my electronics bay, so obviously you're going to have a bit more of a fun time with that. But yeah, mine's got fins and fillets now.
I've limited myself to the tiny expensive electronics, so
yeah,
that's fun.
Just do double blue Raven, go all the way.
Oh god.
Well,
you're already putting the 7680 at risk, so just let her rip.
And for some reason I've decided I need GPS again, which
yeah, for some reason.
Yeah, let's just make it more expensive to lose. That's the way to do it.
Yeah, I decided to total up the amount just in hardware and electronics I'm going to lose if this rocket flight goes bad, and I shouldn't have did all that, because it's $1,000.
Yeah.
So anyway, Ed, thanks for reaching out to contact@aggpodcast.com. If you have a question you want us to answer, send us an email, or you can join my Patreon at patreon.com/rocketvlogs. And you can get in on the conversation before the episode airs. So let's dive in to rules of thumb. We made a little bit of a list here. And I'll start since I put in the first couple. So what we're kind of doing here is we're parsing through all these general rules of thumb that you'll hear people give out as like gospel information in the high power rocketry world, and kind of weeding out what is and isn't necessary to adhere to. So the first one that I have listed is this is one that I got taught when I was very young, that you want 10 times the body diameter in feet for your shock cord. So a 4-inch rocket, you want 40 feet of shock cord. And of course, me, I took that as you want 40 feet in each section. So our 4-inch rockets had 80 feet of shock cord for a while there, which was fun to look at in the sky, I will admit. But looking back, it's a little cumbersome and unnecessary. A lot, actually. I still kind of adhere to this, but I break it up between the two sections.
Yeah, to me, that's like sort of East Coast rule. where it lands in a tree and it still touches the ground type of thing.
Right.
Some people also say 2 to 3 times rocket length, which is, I think, more of a minimum.
So, like, you have a 5-foot rocket, you want at least 10 to 15 feet of shock cord?
Yeah.
That seems pretty soft.
Well, see, that's the thing. Yeah, well, you know, the difference between... we are kind of on the different extremes of shot cords.
This is true. Taylor's like, I want no more than 2 feet in the 12-inch Punisher. That's all we need.
We had a big discussion on the amount of shot cord that should be in the double Arcus.
Yeah. To be fair, though, I wasn't really thinking about the bag element of it. And to this day, I'm like, that's still pretty short. But when you divide up the Y harness and the two parachutes and the fact that there's no tension because the nose cone just flies off into the abyss.
If anything, admittedly, it helps the deployment.
Yeah. We did it a little earlier than we needed to have the nose cone go off into the abyss, but we don't need to dive too far into that right now.
Well, the coupler was still in.
Yeah, that part worked perfect.
Yeah.
So perfect, we didn't even know the nose cone was gone until we went out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, as far as shock cord length goes, I don't know that any of those are wrong. I don't necessarily... I don't agree with the 10-time diameter thing unless you fly around a lot of trees. So, you know, if you fly at Bong or out east or
how do
whatever.
You decide? Because from my perspective, it looks like you're just kind of like, this will be good.
Who, me?
Yeah.
I feel like for the majority of rockets until they, like... So, like, it more has to do with the weight of the rocket, I guess. So, sort of like the more of a level one size rocket, I'll probably do, like, I guess I never really do less than 20 feet in the drogue. So, drogue's between 20 and 35 feet, and then main's between 15 and 30 feet. Well, 12 and 30 feet.
So, yeah, pretty narrow window.
Yeah. And then I never went before above like that 30, 35 foot until we did the big Punisher and the Arcus. So, but generally, I would say 20 or 30 feet drogue. And then I usually do 15 or 20 in the main.
All right. Well, I guess that doesn't really answer whether or not we support that rule of thumb even slightly. So, good start, everybody. We're killing it.
I think I followed the 2 to 3 time, I think, roughly.
Yeah. So I guess Boshart, what do you do? What's your concept?
I don't remember where I heard it or read it, but it was a while ago and I've kind of just always followed it, but it's around like 5-ish times the length of the rocket, and like that goes for each section. If it's like a classic or a typical dual deploy rocket and it's like a 5-foot lower section, then I'll do like 25 feet in the bottom and then, you know, probably end up with 15 or so up top. But
that actually sounds fairly sensible.
Yeah.
Huh, maybe that's the perfect one. Postart's got it.
It works pretty good. I've had good success.
See, this isn't really applicable for me because I don't really use this many times. I just have that in an internal gauge that I've made myself.
Right.
this feels right. Sort of like right. the ejection delay on motors.
Yeah, so it does land back on the that should do it kind of mindset. Perfect.
Yeah.
So if you want to follow Taylor's procedures, whatever seems good. I have to say the shock cord that comes with a lot of dual deploy kits is kind of short. But
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly on the main side of things, I feel like.
Yeah, the Polecat 5.5-inch Nike Smoke came with, like, I think 12 feet for each section, which is a little soft, but I ran with it, and I just put soft brakes in everything now, so it'll probably be fine.
See, with the main, you can kind of get away with whatever, because if your charges are sized right, like, there's not going to be a whole lot of action. With the Drogue, because you're kind of, like, on the main, you sort of have a stable descent rate, whereas right. on the Drogue, you could be going really fast, or, I don't know, just... it's a lot more violent, I feel like.
Yeah, most of all, you just don't want to have too short of a shock cord combined with too aggressive of an ejection charge, which yeah. actually brings us to the next thing that I wrote down here, because I heard this from somebody once and it was like, that seems wildly aggressive, but they said that you should do a 1 gram per inch of diameter for your rocket, for your ejection charge.
Which certainly will work, but
yeah,
that so, is so crazy to me. I mean...
And I mean, that the rockets that they were talking about, like, were a lot of head-end flights. So like a 6-inch rocket with just the nose cone separating, he would put a 6-gram charge. Which will do it, for sure.
It sounds like one of those rules of thumb.
Blow it up or blow it out kind of things.
Yeah, but it seems like it probably was more applicable like 20 years ago. But I mean, I don't know. Some people are still doing, like, if you have a lot of volume, like if you had a bigger, longer rockets, that seems like it would work better.
Right. And that's the thing is, like, what I was driving at there for putting this was that there's not really a rule of thumb that coincides with rocket diameter to ejection charge ratio. You really should just properly see what volume you're trying to overcome here.
The closest you could get to a rule of thumb is if you go to Vernol's website and it's like this many grams per 6 inches of
X airframe diameter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's about as close as you can get to a rule of thumb for that.
Yeah. Shout out VernK.net. Thank you, Vern, for leaving that website hosted for all these years.
That's still Seriously. Pretty much what I use for when I get ready to ground test as a starting point. And it is unbelievably reliable as a good starting point. I usually only have to adjust a little bit.
Yeah, I generally just do the, like, rocketry calculators. Although some of them are like, the ejection charge one is fine. The one that's for altimeter port sizing is a little confusing. Like, this is how many 64ths of an inch you'll need. I'm like, why didn't you just, you've done all this math. Why wouldn't you just be like, okay, use this drill bit? But, you know, it's for smarter people than I suppose. But, yeah, that was basically all the rules of thumb that Postard and I could come up with. Fortunately, Taylor, the one who pitched this concept, also had a ton of them in his back pocket. So I'm going to hand the reins over to him now.
To be fair, I had to look up a lot of these. Just because I'm not, as we discussed, I'm not so much of a rule of thumb guy. I mean, I have my own, but they're more of, this is what feels right based on my experience. So
it's your thumb specifically.
Yeah, my specific thumb, not the universal. So where are we at here? Stability, the old I've seen a lot of people where it needs the 2 caliber stability, 2 body diameters between the CG and CP.
I've always understood that it's 1 for subsonic flight and 2 for supersonic flight. But I've also come to learn that, you can get away with far less.
Yes. I think, yeah, it's definitely more important when you start to get to the above Mach 2 range. But yeah, I mean, like, Punishers fly great at 0.65 caliper stability. I mean, with a hard hitting motor. So take that for what you will. I don't think, I mean, when I talk to people and they start mentioning that they're adding nose weight to get up to their like 2 caliper stability rule,
right?
I'm like, that's when you need to step back and go, what are we doing here?
Like, right.
It's probably going to be fine, and if anything, you're going to induce coning on your rocket from overstability,
which is something that not a lot of people realize will happen. They're like, well, yeah. What's this going to be, too stable? Well, yes, actually.
In fact, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so I mean, that's 2 calibers is only, I only ever touch that if it's going to be a really fast flight. But yeah, like you said, I did kind of find the limits of how low you can go with a Punisher, though, with the 5-inch on the M4500. Though I'm not convinced that wasn't just it trying to take the pad with it. But it did, I think, did it get a little left turn.
I think it was the long floppy rails, to be honest.
That's, yeah, that's what I mean.
Because mine kind of went at an angle, too, just the opposite direction, so it didn't look as bad.
Yeah, it put a huge gash down the side of my rocket, which is what leads me to believe that it was the rail and not the stability. But that said, I'll probably throw a little nose weight in it if I'm going to do a 3-grain 98 again, just to be on the safe side.
Oh, I forgot. I think I can't. Well, I don't. I might have added some to mine. I don't really remember.
You did, like, not, yeah.
Like
2 ounces or amount. Something like that.
Yeah. So yeah, calibers of stability. I would say a rule of thumb is make sure it's above 0.65 and generally at least one. But that's not a hard rule. You know, it depends on the rocket.
Stubby rockets need not apply. Somebody started a thread on the Rocketry Forum, like disbanding the cone theory. But yeah, I don't really know. Like, we're all just trying to trick the Barrowman equation. All I know is that when you make that cone thing in RockSim, the rocket flies as straight as RockSim says it's going to. So
yeah,
I've never seen hard evidence backed up by a flight dictating that that does not work.
Even if somehow mathematically it's not supposed to work, it sure seems like it's working quite well.
That's
for
what
us.
I'm saying.
So
yeah.
I'm going to continue to use it. Also, if you put it behind a rocket that doesn't need it, it doesn't really change anything. So
yeah, that's the big thing for me. Yeah, that was what kind of really sold me on it. If you put it on an Iris, the greatest rocket ever made, then it has zero effect on the center pressure.
Yeah. So I don't know. I guess we covered that.
I'd
best
say
that we
stick
can.
With one. One is a good rule of thumb. Two is overkill unless you're going supersonic.
I would say one caliper for a normal shaped rocket and like 0.6 for stubby.
Yeah.
Or 0.5.
Did you say caliper?
Caliper.
Digital
caliper.
All right, well, anyway. Let's move on.
Thrust to weight ratio. 4-1, 5-1 is what I see a lot. Sometimes 3-1.
Yeah, 5-1 is what I generally see, but I think the actual rule book says 3-1 is the minimum unless you have like thrust vectoring. What's interesting is I'm actually going to spoil a little bit of the Patreon real quick, because somebody I asked about rules of thumb that people are familiar with or that they use in rocketry, and somebody said, let me pull it up early here. Michael Grayless says, 10-1 thrust to weight ratio. This was a great way to learn how to select motors, which is pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
If you're using light rockets, it's pretty easy to stumble on a 10-1 thrust to weight ratio, but like, that's pretty hectic for like a sort of bare minimum rule of thumb situation.
I mean, I don't really like to go much below 10-1, but that's just sort of my flight profile preference.
What about the mini mag?
What about it?
Yeah, I guess you fly it on like I-345s and stuff. So That's probably still 10
to 1. I mean, 10 to 1. If it, my mini mag only weighed like a little, like 4 pounds maybe. So if you're talking 40 pounds of thrust, that's.
Oh, but are you? Are you talking 40 pounds of average thrust, Taylor?
Well, this is what was the next part of the discussion. The 4-to-1, 5-to-1 thrust to weight ratio isn't really like that's kind of well agreed upon. But the problem is how people like the how that is figured. You should use the initial thrust of the motor, not the average thrust.
Right. I think, and that
I think average thrust is a good tool to get an idea, but until you actually look at the thrust curve, you don't know exactly what's going on.
Right. Well, and that's especially the case with motors like the K375 or the N1000, which I recently had a bit of an issue with. That rocket's not flying at NSL anymore. We decided there was a decent chance it's going to break the waiver, so we're skipping that, and it'll be flying at Black Rock instead. However, because it was an N, I had to reach out and tell the people what my plans were, and they took issue with the N1000 being in a 40-pound rocket, because by that general rule of thumb, using the average thrust, the maximum safe liftoff weight for an Aerotech N1000 would be a 33-pound rocket, which is crazy because it is a 28-pound motor. So if anybody wants to build a fully ready-to-fly 98-millimeter rocket that weighs, 5 pounds without a motor in it, I will be impressed. However, if you look at the thrust curve, you'll see that it has an initial spike of like 540 pounds and that this rocket initially was, 11.5 to 1 thrust to weight or something like that. So yeah,
people have flown 6-inch glass rockets on N1000s.
Yeah, rockets that weigh 33 pounds without a motor.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was like, that doesn't really apply here. And they're like, well, we need simulations. So I was like, okay, well, here you go. And then it became a whole thing. So I'm content with not flying that rocket there anymore in the first place. And go way smaller, but not that much lower. I mean, yeah, quite a bit, but anyway, still high.
So yeah, bust out those thrust curves and look at that initial thrust. And because there's like a lot of long, like obviously boost sustain motors, but long burn motors a lot of times will have a hefty spike at the beginning.
Yeah, and that's
so.
Yeah. I had a similar issue with the Big Iris at Tripoli Vegas because it had a K850 in it. And they're like, what, a K motor in this? I'm like, yeah, it weighs 16 pounds. I know it's 12 feet tall, but it doesn't weigh anything.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back in 1997, when people flew bruisers regularly on like I-284s.
Right, yeah. How soon we forget. That was the craziest part to me. It was like half the dudes from Tripoli Vegas were there for that. I'm like, this is old school. You guys have been around forever. You should know this is good. 850? Are you kidding me? That's going to go so high. It went like 1,600 feet. Soon. Crazy.
Okay. So next on the list, we got nose cone fit. The common rule of thumb is to do the old, can you pick it up by the nose cone without the nose cone flying off? With the optimal fit to, I guess, wiggle it and it slowly comes off. I actually have been known to use this one.
Put people's rockets in the ground at Bonneville, dude. You've been known to hurt people's lives and happiness with this rule of thumb, Taylor.
But all my glass rockets kind of use shear pins. So
right.
This is more of a motor ejector cardboard situation for me personally, and I feel like it works pretty well. I don't really like my glass stuff fitting that tight because I feel like it can jam a lot easier.
Yeah, and that is – I don't think a lot of people understand that the point of it is if you can just pick it up and the rocket can come off, then it's going to be able to drag separate very easily.
Yeah, or in a situation where you aren't sheer pinning your main.
Jeez.
Sorry about the stroke. If you aren't sheer pinning the main, then you're just relying on a friction fit, and you don't want to just dump the main when the drogue comes out. And so that's a pretty good use for that. Like my Nike Smoke still uses that method, and it seems to work. I don't know.
All right. Well, how about for these so far, before we move on, we each give our consensus as to whether or not we accept them, which we've kind of already touched on. The shock cord one, the 10 times the diameter gets a rejection from us in general. The ejection size, or ejection charge matching your diameter inches to gram, is a definite rejection from us.
It's a bit too much.
4-to-1 thrust to weight, I generally would say...
What? The stability.
Oh, yeah.
Two caliber yeah. Stability.
Two calibers of stability, rejected.
Yeah, no.
Reject that, tradition, soft, embrace modernity.
I feel like that's more of a soft rejection, though, because it's not... really a deal breaker. It's just like that shouldn't be a hard rule.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll put an asterisk on it for supersonic flight and exemptions for when you need to add the rocket's weight and nose weight to get to it. Don't do that. And nose cone fit, being able to lift the rocket by the nose cone, I say passes all the vibe checks on our end.
Did we, and thrust to weight pass? If you're using initial thrust, not average.
Right. 4-to-1, yeah. Well, 4-to-1 on the initial thrust is a little sketchy. 5-to-1 is what I see a lot of people talking about. Oh, no, I forgot about my mic stand.
To me, 4-to-1 is only applies if there's zero wind. It's perfect day scenario.
Oh, he's struggling.
I agree.
He's got the Lemmy mic going on.
All right.
Oh. Gotta let Nigel.
Oh, Nigel the Rocket Cat has arrived.
He is here letting us know about all of his rules of paw.
Yeah. Rules of toe. All right. Well, this next one I want to come out swinging because I wholeheartedly disagree with it. Above X weight. Why rail buttons are required.
And I've seen everyone seems to have their version of that at different made up weights. Really comes down to the rocket and the launch pad. That it's not like X weight, you need Y rail button.
Right.
We've seen 30, 40 pound rockets fly off 10-10 rails. Doesn't mean it should necessarily, but
yeah. Crazy Jim flew a 6-inch rocket on an N10, which is pretty, if I wouldn't do it, but it is possible.
Yeah.
Should we talk about how you can fly a rocket with 10-10 rail buttons on a 15-15 rail? Or do you think people aren't ready for that conversation?
They're probably not ready for that. I've brought it up to people before and they don't even want to hear it. So
my dad is level 3 like that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah. It hurts the paint a lot. So if you value that, don't do that.
Because
the
whole rail button goes in. They didn't even have any 10-10s out there.
No, that was like one. Yeah.
And we were like, oh, I guess we get to test that thing.
Of course, before my dad's level 3, we tested that with a much less cumbersome and tedious rocket, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were there. It was your J145 flight because you wanted a 20-foot rail to get that thing going nice and straight.
Probably needed a 20-foot rail.
Yeah, it was a little sketchy.
That's a good example of that
thrust curve spike that I was relying on just not quite doing it. But
yeah, I think in general, what you should be more concerned about is how your rail buttons are attached. If you've got a heavy rocket, then
yeah,
the clamp force holding the rail button to the rocket is far more important in my mind than the rail button diameter itself. Now, obviously, there are certain scenarios where, say, if you fly an M4500 off of a 10 or 15 foot rail and your rocket only needs to go 2 feet before it's stable, and a 10-10 rail at that length does get pretty wobbly. So you can run into issues there.
Yeah, I was a hard 10-10 for any rocket under 30 pounds, but after we had the M4500 rail whip scenario with the super long 10-10 rails, I've sort of changed my tune on that a little bit, because you can't always assume there's going to be a nice short 10-10 rail for you for your really fast flight. So
I think in general, not that it's like something I specifically adhere to, but in general, if I build a rocket if it's 6 inches in diameter or bigger, I usually put 15-15s.
Yeah.
That's about where it lands. But yeah, more importantly, especially like with the V2, I was pretty into making sure that those were well attached.
The other thing to remember is, like, you could fly a 30-40 pound rocket on 10-10 buttons, but like the buttons are going to be pretty chewed up afterwards probably.
Yeah.
So rail buttons are really above a certain weight rocket, they're really a wear item. Like I've had to replace them on some rockets 2 or 3 times.
Right.
But then, yeah, you have people out east that, like MDRA has, like, all their big pads are Unistrut. So everyone just uses Unistrut, which, if that's what your club has, then, you know, I guess that's what you use. But yeah,
it's when crazy people to say,
it's over 20 pounds, it needs Unistrut. Well,
right. Yeah, there's like 4-inch rockets with Unistrut buttons and stuff.
Yeah.
A fun fact that actually not a lot of people probably are immediately aware of is the fact that our Arcus has 15-15 buttons on it. Did not fly off Unistrut. So take that information as you will. Would that thing weigh 100-ish, 95 pounds?
It was 100 pounds, yeah.
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 I'm certain people have flown rockets much bigger than that or heavier than that on just off 15-15s also.
So I guess to some extent we kind of back this rule of thumb. I mean, it's one of those things that, again, we kind of just feel it out.
Well, the problem with this rule of thumb is it's just that. It's a rule of thumb. It's when people start to try to reinforce that as like law.
Yeah.
The problem with a lot of these rule of thumbs.
A fairly recent big launch where somebody was trying to reject rockets from flying because they didn't have bigger rail buttons.
Which clubs are allowed to have their policies, I guess, and they can enforce that, but doesn't mean we agree with it. So
right. So yeah, I guess in general we sort of accept this one, but with the asterisk of being like, keep in mind that just because what you think is the case doesn't necessarily mean that it is accurate.
It's very much case by case, and there is no real rules on it. It's just kind of whatever you think.
Which is why I'm flying my 5.5-inch Horizon on an M motor off of mini rail buttons. Let's go.
Oh, no.
That'd be kind of awesome.
Estes Porta pad. No, actually, of course, I'm doing the correct era thing with that, and it's going to fly off a 1/2-inch rod. Anyway, let's continue. Rail button placement. This is an interesting one. I've always, like Taylor has written here, in the centering rings and upper button as close as possible to CG. That's pretty similar to what I've always been told is like CG or forward of it for your upper rail button. And then if you have a really long rocket, then, you know, push it up as far as you can without it interfering your recovery gear or coupler, which is why my 4-inch Punisher had a hilariously high rail button. Because when I flew it for my level 3, it had an extra 4 feet sitting on top of it. And now, hilariously, it's 4 feet in the ground somewhere. So
maybe deeper.
Could be. Could be.
Yeah, this is another one that I don't necessarily disagree with, but it's when people, you know, say it as the this is how it has to be rule. Yeah, I sometimes put it in the centering ring if the centering ring happens to be in a good place. But, you know, sometimes there's just two ring, I guess if there's a third ring, I'll put it in the third ring because it's right. Kind of up a little bit further. But when people put them in the rings just because, oh, they have to be in the rings and the forward ring is like at the back of the rocket, basically.
Right.
That's not ideal.
They're like 6 inches apart.
It'll still work. I mean, it's not ideal though, but
I don't know if John Clifton listens to this podcast, and we love you, John, but the rail button situation on the 7.5-inch corkscrew scares us a little bit. I know he's going to be like, it works. It works every time.
Well, and it does.
We are not ready for that scary. Though. Yeah. They're really close together.
On the other end of that, the people that say it has to be on the center of gravity. No, I mean,
yeah,
I think as close as it is convenient to get it close to the center of gravity, that's going to be optimal because it's going to put less strain on the button. But other than that, put it somewhere where it's not going to interfere with your recovery gear and don't put it above your separation point because it's just going to make lining stuff up difficult.
Yeah. Also, sort of adjacent to this subject, a lot of people aren't ready for when they find out that a lot of my rail buttons just go into fiberglass and nothing else.
Oh, I almost always do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially on my 5-inch Punisher. Somebody was like, how are the rail buttons secure? I was like, well, it's fiberglass. Like, what does that mean? Like, it means I drilled a hole slightly smaller than the screw and I threaded it in and now it's there. And, yeah. I think it was, yeah, it must have been the M4500 flight because I've only flown it twice. But they're like, that's interesting. And I'm like, they set up the pad wrong when I flew to Tripoli, Idaho. So it was just, there was no stop. It was just dangling from the rail buttons with an M motor in it for 10 minutes before it flew. And they're still attached. Like I said, the V2, I definitely made a priority in making sure that those were strong, and especially the Honest John because I have 1-inch standoffs. But
yeah,
that's one that not a lot of people are ready for. They're like, well, how do I back the rail buttons on my 3-inch Punisher? I'm like, you don't.
What's funny is my very first flight on my 3-inch Punisher, which was a J800, it stripped the rear rail button off, and so I don't know why it just dirty rail, maybe it just torque, it didn't affect the flight at all. What do? Just drill a hole right above it, put it back in, good to go. It's flown like 20 times since then.
I tried that with my Big Daddy because I had it a little misaligned, and I drilled the hole close enough that the rail button would hide that I had messed it up. That created an issue. Every once in a while, I'll do what I did with that one, where I'll just like put a drop of CA in before I thread the screw in if I'm feeling a little zesty. Because you can still break it eventually.
Yeah.
If you really need to, you put a lot of pressure on the screwdriver, you can break it loose. But yeah, I mean, to a certain point, you can definitely get away with that. And I mean, my 5-inch Punisher is, I don't know, was it like close to 30 pounds with an M in it? That's flown.
Yeah, I flew mine on a M1939, and I had no backing.
I feel like a lot of people are going to hate that. We might have just shot ourselves in the foot for every RSO to any big launch we ever go to.
Why?
Like, no, I know how these rail buttons are fastened. You can't fly this.
You can't fly it because it's worked so many times?
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's move on, anyway. Shall we? Rail button placement. I'd say in general, we reject that it has to be hard placed at the center of gravity or backed by a centering ring. A little bit more case by case than that, but shoot close to the CG. And
both good options, not something to live by.
Right.
As a hard rule.
Yeah.
Call it a rule of like the second knuckle. It's almost there.
Rule of thumbnail.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Rule of thumb skin hanging off.
All right. Well, descent rates. Taylor has written 50 feet per second for Drogon, 15 feet per second for the main.
I see these as sort of a, you know, if you were in a perfect world, that is sort of ideal. And I kind of agree with it. That's sort of what I base things off of. But then it's, once again, case by case basis. There's some rockets, like a glass rocket, you can drop a lot faster than that. Obviously, you want to keep it within, at least for main descent rate, in a safety approved descent rate. You don't want to go above 30 or whatever the limit is. But
yeah, well, I feel like I grew up with 20 FPS as like the target for mains, but Idaho's ground is quite soft, and I learned very quickly that that doesn't work everywhere. And I learned it again, and then I learned it again.
It also doesn't work
after that.
Even in Idaho, if you find the one rock.
Yeah, that's
which
true.
Both of us found.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like 17 to 20 is the bread and butter, and then 15's like bring it down slow, and then the spicy recovery is like 25. I don't really like to go above 25.
Sporty, as our friend Joe Barnard would say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for softer landings, I have like 10 in my head, which is the Honest John on the Cert 3XL was like 11. And it's still, if you watch the onboard video, I'm like, that hit way harder than I would have thought.
I think below 15, I'm just like, this is definitely, yeah, I just know that it has too much parachute in it. So, which sometimes I will do on purpose, but it's sort of like, who knows what it is? It's going to be slow AF.
Yeah, that's basically the Fat Boy, the Red Max, the iRai, the Honest John now are all getting the sub 15 feet per second treatment once I fix them, if I ever do. But the Drogue descent rate is an interesting one to me because I've always operated under the assumption like 80 is fine.
Well, I think 80 is fine depending on the rocket. It really comes down to how stable is the rocket and
how prone to streamlining is it?
Yeah. I like flying a well-balanced traditional dual deploy rocket that doesn't have really big fins or anything. If you're drogueless, I mean, you probably will be around 80 and it'll probably be fine. You just don't want the sections slamming into each other or the payload section coming down nose first. So, but I think 50 is a good rule of thumb for sure.
All right. Well, I say, yeah, for that one, we pretty much accept it as decent.
Yeah.
Green check mark on that one, I guess. We haven't really
still. It's still a case-by-case basis, but I think it's valid as a starting point.
I think what we're finding here is that we pretty much think all rules of thumb, are to be ignored, and you should assess each rocket carefully.
I think with the descent rate one, though, if someone went strictly by that, that's not going to be a deal breaker for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, yeah. It's not as crazy as the above X
weight. It's more of a, it's like this is good, but there's certain instances where it could be something different.
All right. Well, want to read what you got on here next?
In a cluster, always put the most powerful motor in the center. And also never air start the center motor, which I think are good rules of thumb. That being said, I think it's pretty cool when you
break both
of those rules.
Yeah.
That's
kind of what I was thinking too. Is it's like, yeah, that is the smart and safest play, but it's kind of cool if you don't do that.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of cases where you those rules weren't followed and it worked and it was really cool. So
I'd say right on the edge is the K2045s around the O in the big dark star.
Yeah.
That's where you're maybe playing with fire a little bit there. But it was the wild man, so we expect nothing less.
I also always think of on LDRS 20, the extreme racketry video where Porthos flew on 6K 1050s and air started the L.
Yeah.
I always thought that was so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, we should do that with the Punisher. Speaking of this rule of thumb, let's break it.
See, that's the rule of thumb where I'm like, I really like breaking the rule, but I don't want to do it myself. It's kind of scary.
Dude, six of them. Air started and 1,000.
Oh, God.
It would be so sick.
It would just start burning sideways.
Nah, it'd be fine. All right, M2050s to the N1000.
I think it would be cooler to air start like an N4000.
God, it would go so hard. It'd be so crazy to see that huge rocket just like starting to slow down and then just take off again.
I'm really into the like you're shifting gears and it just take. I mean, we kind of saw it with our late N3300 ignition, but yeah. Just like it seems like it's moving at a good speed, and then it just or like at the Argonia Cup recently when we saw some of those aggressive two stages,
right?
Really heavy rockets.
The K1050s, like, dude.
Yeah, that was so just, cool.
It hit different. Yeah, so I mean, I guess check mark on that one. It is the smart way to do it. But if you know what you're doing, breaking that rule is pretty sick.
Yeah, that's one of those where I'm like, if I'm like the prefect or whatever that's making the call on that, that's what I'm like, this is a pretty good rule.
Yeah.
As a bystander, I'm like, yeah, that's gonna be cool. We should break the rule. So we can put a check mark by that. Cause that is, I think that's something I would recommend to everybody, but it's cool to break the rule. Anyway.
all right, moving on. Fin span, at least one body diameter. We can say one caliber as well in this case, or caliper if you prefer a Taylor. This is one that, yeah, I just adhere to it. And that's pretty much,
yeah,
basically set in stone to me, unless it's a really long rocket.
But when it's a, yeah, I just feel like when it's a really long rocket, then you run into other issues, even though on paper it's good. You
right.
Know what I mean? Like, you still just don't have enough guidance there.
So, in general, yes, this one is a good one to.
I think this is a good hard rule.
Yeah.
This is the one.
This is the one.
And I have to say, we know there's a bunch of college teams and students that listen to this podcast, and we appreciate you being here so much. But it seems like a lot of you guys missed the memo on this one. We see a lot of questionably sized fins from universities.
And I understand how it happens because, you know, you have your long rocket. What do we do? Oh, it's overstable. Let's make these fins absolutely tiny. Oh, looks good. But there's just not enough fin area there.
Just bump her up a little bit. We promise it's worth it. What you can do is shorten that really long rocket, which we highly advise. Moving on. This is a hot topic. Jesse. Whoa,
wait. Before we go on, I didn't put it on the list, but some people were saying that as far as like a rule of thumb for fin size in general is for the root to be two calibers of stability, or no, sorry, not stability, two body diameters for the root.
Yeah, the arc does rule.
Make the perfect the arc
is
fin.
So the arc is the smallest fin.
There you go.
We've said according to that rule of thumb. But to me, I'm like, that doesn't seem as important.
The Nike Smoke doesn't follow that.
Yeah. So.
And that's why the Iris is better. Anyway.
Oh. No. Moving on.
We should revisit some comments at the end of this because we got some people's Iris to Nike Smoke ratios from the last one.
No. I forgot about that.
This is one that's a hotly debated topic amongst the anti-gravity group because we stand adamantly against it. And Jesse brought it up, Model Rocket Guy, on our podcast. And we've admitted that they can look great and make a rocket look really cool. But there is no transitional point that a thrust plate becomes necessary. And our O-motor cluster with flush-mounted tubes and no thrust plate stands as our symbolic trademark of not needing a thrust plate. Yes, the pre-drilled holes, the adapters are awesome. I mean, Aeropac just goes right on. That's cool. It's starting. I'm going to rant. You don't need it. There's not a point where you need it.
If we will happily go back and correct ourselves if we happen to find that point, but it's not looking good.
The propellant just goes right through the rocket. I mean, it's very hard on the line of a want, not a need. I've never had a case brought to my attention where a thrust plate was a necessity.
Boy, they look cool.
They do.
Anyway.
Motor mount size. This is a good one to live by as well. Bigger is better. You can always adapt down. That is very true. Unless you're Taylor, who's like, yeah, I guess you could. But there's no reason to.
The past 2 years, I've kind of changed a little bit.
I think the funniest instance of this to me was when we first started talking about the 5-inch Punishers. You're like, but I can't afford 98mm motors. I was like, you don't have to fly one just because you have the motor mount. You're like, but I don't like an adapter. It doesn't. And then what did it do? It inspired you to get on the Alpha Chad grind set and buy a 98mm motor case. So you're welcome.
Yeah, I know. That's, I bought the right after I got that rocket. I'm like, guess I need an M1939 for it.
I really have been a bad influence. Like, you were really content flying your 4 rockets like 8 times per launch and just being good. And I was like, dude, watch this. I'm going to get my level 3 and immediately buy a 98-15-360K. Why? I don't know. And then you're like, you know what? I like that.
Yeah, we are horrible influences on each other for rocket spending.
Yeah.
Yeah, I literally flew like the same 4 rockets or same 6 rockets for like 10 years. And then Braden's like, I got all these cool rockets I never fly. And then I'm like, I got to build a lot of more cool rockets.
And boom, now look where we are. Now I'm Braden flying way more rockets and you have way more rockets.
Which I'd like to bring up the storage on all the rockets. It's real, real bummer.
yeah, I can see that, especially if I have ones that aren't yours, but
only one.
That's true. My rockets are kind of just like all over the country at this point. There's still some at my parents' house in Idaho. There's a bunch here in California. There's one at Taylor's house.
We don't have all of them.
No, where would I put my 7.5-inch Saturn V? Reel me that one.
In the living room.
Yeah, no, that's where the Honest John is.
Well, next to it. Well, it's, this is like when I, this is kind of what's keeping me from building the 7.5-inch Nike Smoke. It's not going to keep me from it, but it's allowing me to push it back a little bit.
Dude, I started looking at like retail shop or commercial shop space in this area, and it's kind of making me hesitant to wanting to move down closer to LA. I found like it was like 850 square foot shop with like a bathroom and an office space and AC for like $2,000 a month, which is
pretty good,
pretty dang good. And it had a 2-post lift in it.
Ooh,
I was like, wow, that's crazy. We could just have the old Rocket Vlogs workshop, and then I could also work on cars there. And the AC, man, I had a shop with AC for like 8 months, and it was the greatest thing. Anyway.
Yeah, I've never got to haven't got to experience that yet. So
you'll get there, champ. Maybe if you posted a YouTube video every once in a while, you can have a little bit of income, you know? Although I have to say, you're going to have to get a lot of views to make that justification. And I can tell you that the amount that I get is not enough. Patreon.com/rocketvlogs if you want to see the anti-gravity group workshop come to fruition. It's $1 a month. If everybody here listening, $1 a month. Hold on, I'm not done with my pitch yet. Anyway, so motor mount size.
Yes, I am vocally against adapters. Although I'm slowly coming around, but I don't like it.
You know what I'm vocally against? Being this gung-ho about being like, there's a motor mount in that rocket, you fill it up, and then flying your 5-motor cluster rocket with 1 2-grain motor in it.
It was a test flight. Oh my gosh.
Test flight was an M4J's.
Yeah, well, you weren't using a new recovery setup.
I was too.
No, you weren't.
In that rocket, I was.
You weren't using some fancy tether.
No, I didn't need to. And it worked fine. It would have worked fine if it went 5 times as high.
Yeah, well, it went 5 times as high. Maybe I wouldn't have seen it work.
You would have.
Listen,
would have.
It's only because I had that nice Fruity Shoots in the deployment bag that I flew like 10 times and I never got to see it open. And so I'm like, if the Sumo broke on the first flight, I wanted to see it break. That was it.
I'm going to say it, dude. You're a coward.
And the audience agrees.
My point is very hypocritical to be upset about people using adapters and then fly 1 motor in your 5-motor rocket.
Right? I didn't use an adapter though.
I guess that's true. I guess, but you might as well have. You left a lot of impulse on the table. You're lucky it didn't hit 2 trucks. Anyway, let's move on. It's what happens when you leave empty outboards.
Not for me.
Well, you got lucky, champ. Think of the fact that you were really worried about that, actually.
Yeah, remember? It was.
If it had gone 5 times as high, the chances of it being anywhere near a truck would have been way slimmer.
It's true.
Always break 10,000, at least.
Yeah. Even if the waiver's below that. It's fine.
Yeah. I was kind of living by like that for like 6 years. And then I decided big rockets are cool.
Yeah, I had the opposite sort of situation where I was like, don't go anywhere near that. That's how rockets get lost.
And now he's into losing rockets.
Yeah, now I have 2 minimum diameter end motor projects. Cool. Anyway. The final one.
We need to make like people can vote on who's going to lose their rockets first this year.
We'll get a betting pool going.
Yeah.
Mine flies in 11 days. So smart money. Or maybe bets on
who loses the most money. Who has the first successful minimum diameter flight this year?
That's going to be me. 11 days.
What do you think? What do you think, Postart? Is he going to do it? Are you feeling good about it?
I think it'll work, yeah.
I mean, on paper, it seems like it should
work. I think it'll be okay, and let me tell you, that hurts to say, because if it isn't okay, I get a Dr. Rocket 6400. But I think it'll be all right.
Not going to happen. Not going to happen.
He sabotages it.
He's like, whoa, look at that. Turns the electronics off. All right, the final one that Taylor's written down here is the length of the rocket should be a 10 to 20 to 1 aspect ratio, which is a crazy wide margin.
But, so I actually stole this from an old page of rules of thumb that was on Rocketry Online Info Central.
Dang.
Yeah.
But I bet a bunch of people listening don't even know what that is.
I included it because I kind of agree with it. So think about this. Their example they had on the page. I won't act like I came up with the example. Is 6-inch rocket between 60 inches and 120 inches.
So 5 and 10 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do have to say that the Wildman Ultimate Dark Star is like 12 feet. It does look a little comically long. Now, with all the other perspective I have.
But you just think that as the limit, like, yeah, definitely. Because, you know, there's the people that everything has to be 14, 16 feet long when you get to 6-inch, 7.5-inch rockets.
Don't you dare cut that tube down. Don't you dare.
I paid for the whole tube, so I'm going to use all of it.
Yeah, I mean, 12 feet is even pushing it. Like I said, it looks a little goofy, but...
Yeah. 10 to 1 is actually ideal. People don't want to hear it, but that is the optimum length for a rocket.
Can you think of any rocket kits that are commercially available that are right about at that?
I mean, oh, I don't know, maybe the Punisher?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Huh.
Well, I guess
I'm not just saying that. I did read something somewhere once that said that, like, that's for stability purposes. That's ideal or something. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. But
that's great, actually, because that's pretty much exactly where my minimum diameter rocket is, since I did a 5 grain.
I want to probably between like 10 and 12 to 1 is ideal.
So you're saying you give a green check mark to this rule of thumb?
I certainly do. That's why I included it.
I think I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all right with it.
You can definitely see when a rocket looks too long and is goofy. Unless however, it's an upscale, then it's fine.
And obviously, like, you know, it's okay to go shorter than that, but you're just taking that. You're going into short and fat territory, which has a whole different set of rules. So
yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Is it's really fun to break this one on the low side, like the fat boy, the big daddy.
Well, yeah, those are rockets that are obviously not designed to be high performance. They're just fun, goofy little guys.
Yeah, and when you're playing the short and fat game, you're sort of designing the rocket around those parameters, right? If you just like took a regular rocket design and made it dumb short, you basically know that's going to be unstable. So
right. All right. Well, I'm going to move us on to the Patreon comments then. So people, I guess, kind of misunderstood the assignment here, but we're going to read. The first one comes from Eric Beavers. And he says, Eric's rule of thumb number one. If you're thinking it, somebody else already has, and there's probably a dozen threads about it online. Do your research prior to calling Braden just to ask dumb questions. I think this is a great rule of thumb, not even just specifically in the instance of me. There is a lot of information out there, and having been lambasted about it for a good portion of my teenage life for asking questions without caring to Google them. Do a little research, but if you're really struggling with something, don't feel bad about asking for help. And if somebody makes you feel bad about asking for help, say push off grandpa and go find somebody else that's gonna be less upset about it. Any thoughts on that?
Also, if you're gonna post online asking a question, maybe before you hit post or send or whatever, just read it back and think about what what you're asking, because it might sometimes, I mean, the stuff people will ask that's just,
they say really... there's no stupid questions, but Big Rocket kits don't have instructions and assume you know what you're doing. Don't get too sad when you have to order a new airframe. You should have planned the build better. That is an interesting like Wildman kits for the most part don't have instructions. There are some available, but a lot of kits, even if there are online instructions available, they don't come with them when you order it.
Do any kit actually come with instructions anymore?
Lock Precision ones do.
Do they? The big ones?
I think so. I don't know. We should have the lock guys on and talk to them about this.
I felt like I was looking at some recently in person at a launch, and they didn't have them, but maybe I'm wrong on that.
And Eric's number three is, there's a reason you lost your rocket again. H-Motor shouldn't be flown at the park with motor direction, even if it's only slightly windy. I'm actually going to have to say I reject that one. H-Motors, class one flights at like small parks are awesome.
Well, you mean the appropriately sized park for
your, of course,
recovery area.
I see. Yeah, that's probably what he's saying, right? And I mean, it's super cool, especially like with trees and stuff around. I flew a G80 in a park that had like a perimeter of trees. It was crazy loud. Michael Graylis, we talked about this earlier, says 10-1 thrust to rate ratio. This is a great way to learn how to select motors. A little extreme. But Ryan Emmenegger says, first, if you ever get a bad feeling about something, it's for a reason, and you should trust yourself. It happened to me when loading a motor, and it turns out I was missing a grain spacer O-ring. I agree with the sentiment, but also have consciously loaded a motor knowing that I was missing a grain spacer O-ring and knowing that they didn't used to come with them and it wasn't going to make a difference.
That's the best type of O-ring to miss.
The only type of O-ring to miss, we should say.
Yeah.
Except for also, the spacer O-ring that goes on the bottom of an M650. Don't ask me why I include that, but that's one that you can also leave out and it will be fine.
Or on CTI, big CTI motors, that the O-ring that goes under the forward insulator, that's optional.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
It's a thing. It says put it there if there's room.
Oh, yeah.
Also, just now, I just came up with my own rule of thumb. Thrust to weight half of the current wind speed. There we go.
So if it's 20 mile an hour wind, you want 10-1 minimum?
Yeah, doesn't that sound good? I don't know.
So if it's zero, you can have 0-1 thrust of weight. Nice rule, Taylor.
there's on the low end, there's going to be a lit. Don't go below 4-1 or whatever. But
I'm sorry. I had to throw that out there because you know somebody was going to pick that one up if I didn't.
Yeah.
Assume the calculated black powder amount isn't enough and actually pop test before you fly. I keep hearing pop test instead of ground test.
I hate that. I don't know why.
Soda test.
It reminds
test.
Me of when people saying, like, gonna go pop off some fireworks.
Oh, yeah. I do dislike that. At any rate, he has a good point.
Anyway.
You should ground test your rockets.
You should pop test it.
If you've got enough diet DDP around, pop test it. And then if it holds a soda can, fine. You can take it outside and ground test it as well. Okay. Kevin Rulin says, that 10-1 thrusting, what the hell is that? It crosses unit system and uses average thrust. We have great motors now with kicker grains boosting the initial thrust. Yep, that's what we touched on. This is a good one, though, also from Kevin Rulin. The only rocket which doesn't need a tracker is Lost. That is one that I live by. Since Crazy Jim was the first person I heard dictate that any rocket you want back is a rocket that you should put a tracker in it. What rocket should I put trackers in? This is only going 1,500 feet. Any rocket that you want back. And then I almost had to eat crow on that one when I forgot to put the tracker in my 7.5-inch Honest John and went, it's a 10-foot-tall rocket with a 12-foot red, white, and blue parachute. How could I possibly lose it? And then we lost it for an hour and a half.
Yeah, I used to like never, like if I knew I could see the whole flight, I like, why would I put a tracker in it? But then I had to wait around in the Milo one time in Argonia for like an hour and a half, 2 hours when it was like 100 degrees. And I was like, really should have put a tracker in this. So now I'm like, well, even though it looks like it's just dirt everywhere and we should be able to see everything, we're still going to put a tracker in because...
Yeah, another great example. Sorry, Bryce, if you're listening, to keep hammering this one home, but Bryce's size matters. A 7.5-inch rocket that got lost at the Lucerne dry lake bed, which is...
or.
A tough place to lose a rocket that big, yeah, but it does also happen.
Didn't he also kind of lose the 24-inch squat at LDRS?
Yeah. I guess that's a good point. That really is one that I was like, obviously you don't need tracking on that one. I don't think they ever necessarily lost it. It was just there was a little bit of a struggle with getting permission to recover it because it was like privately owned land.
I thought there was a bit where they had trouble actually finding it.
I don't know. Because
it went over
possible.
The tree line.
Well, hopefully Bryce will chime in and let us know. And then Jonathan Gabry says, one, if someone more experienced than you tells you that something's wrong, don't doubt them. I agree with the caveat that you should be positive that they actually have the experience that they claim to have. Two, I agree with 10-to-1 thrust away, but as long as you're above 5-to-1, you're probably fine. Yep, that's about where we landed. And three, if something comes with instructions, Taylor, attention please, like a reloadable motor, do read them. There might be a part you miss and that can go bad. Taylor's out here balling up instructions and throwing them right in the trash. Mocking me for using instructions. I like the pictures, okay? They're helpful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not recommending what I do.
Okay, one last thing we're going to do here. We're going to go revisit the comments from the last podcast episode. Fishing and Fireworks says one Nike, zero IRI here.
That's right.
Decent Brian ratio. Kelsey says, I want all the IRI scales. So far, I have a lock 1 inch, 1.6, 3 inch, and 4 inch. It's a sickness. Robert Benton, unrelated, but he says the Pershing at LDRS 27. That is a good scale rocket.
Oh.
I like the Pack 3.
I can't remember. Somebody else commented it. Perhaps it was on Patreon. Let me look. But I do have to say that the one ratio we got was more Nike smoke than Iris. And that was the point that I was trying to make. There's so many more Nike smokes out in this world. And I don't really remember why that came up, what point I was trying to really drive home. My iris to Nike
about
ratio
which is better.
My iris to Nike ratio is 7-to-2. Okay, so listen, we don't have to take this that seriously. That's our friend Jonathan.
Oh my gosh.
It's because he's a smart man, all right? Okay? Us cultured gentlemen.
Well, currently there are like a million iris sizes available and not really any sizes
and
available.
Like, yeah, no.
Yeah,
Nike
I think
sizes.
That's kind of really what it boils down to. Was like the Nike smoke was really popular when every manufacturer readily had one,
and no one had made an iris.
Yeah, and now, you remember the Lock Precision Isis? One of those came up for sale, Mm-hmm. Somebody was like, so it's an iris with a typo? I was like, no. It's a kit that got renamed after a certain Middle Eastern incident, we'll say. Anyway, I guess it's safe to say that I'm correct, and there's way more Nike smokes than irises out there. And on that bombshell, my name is Braden Carls, and you can find me here on YouTube at Rocket Vlogs. You can follow me on Instagram at BigB1011. And you can join us behind the scenes at patreon.com/rocketvlogs or by clicking the join button below.
My name is Taylor Jesse. I hate motor adapters, and you can find me on the Rocket channel on YouTube talking about how much I hate adapters, probably.
My name is Shane or Postart. You can find me on YouTube at Postart Propulsions. Yeah. Or rocketry.pics if you want to buy pictures.
Yeah, still actually,
have issues with that though.
If you're listening, can you go to that website and see if the buy button works? Because it doesn't for us. And then yeah. The people at the company that he's paying hundreds of dollars to sell with are like, yeah, it's working fine. So yeah. Let us know on that one. And while you're there, buy yourself some pretty wall art. How about that? Nice shout out there. The night shots are really cool. I want to get a bunch of canvas prints for the living room. We are the Anti-Gravity Group. This is the Anti-Gravity Group podcast, and we will see you next time.